morning. It's Wednesday, 9:30 a.m. on January 26, 2011. Quorum is present, and the City Council will come to order. Good morning, Carla. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Good. Can you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We'll proceed, starting with communications. Can you please read the title for item number 82?
Request of Steve Unger to address council regarding the need to account for the increasing number of vacation rentals in residential zones.
Mr. Unger, good morning. You just please have a seat in front of any of the three microphones. We will need your first and last name. We do not want your address. Do not want your address. If you're representing a business or an organization, please let us know that as well.
My name is Steve Unger. I own and operate the Lion and the Rose Bed and Breakfast in Irvington. And each year, I pay $30,000 in lodging tax and $500 in license fees to the city as a bed and breakfast. There are over 20 licensed bed and breakfasts in Portland, collectively paying over $500,000 to the city. And today, I will show you how the city could easily collect another $500,000 by licensing and regulating the over 150 vacation rentals operating in Portland. Vacation rentals are actually short-term rentals in residential zones of less than 30 days duration, and this is in contrast to traditional month-to-month rentals. The primary motivation for vacation rentals is economic. Short-term rentals can generate more revenue than a long-term rental if the owner rents just 7 or 8 nights a month. Currently, there are over 150 vacation rentals listed in the internet for Portland. Two-thirds are listing nightly or weekly rentals. And I have provided you in your handout with sample pages from VRBO.com, I entered it incorrectly in the handout, HomeAway.com, and Airbnb.com. Now, these cover everything from condos in the Pearl to houses in Irvington to houseboats on the Willamette. Currently, the only way to be licensed as a vacation rental in Portland is to be licensed as a bed and breakfast, but hardly any are. This is because to become a B&B requires a Type 2 conditional use review costing $3,000 to $4,000, and the B&B ordinance requires an owner or manager to live on premises. However, unlicensed vacation rentals do not collect lodging tax or pay license fees. No owner or manager lives on site, resulting in an unsupervised situation. And there are no regulations as to the number of guests and no requirement for fire, safety, or health inspection. So the problem is that there are currently over 150 vacation rentals operating with no license or regulation, so the city is losing money in lodging tax and license fees. Guests and neighbors are uninformed and unprotected. And the current lack of consistent regulation actually penalizes those who are licensed or attempt to get licensed. And we've seen this in Irvington. Other cities from Seaside and Cannon Beach to Las Vegas, San Francisco, and even New York City have adopted regulations specific to vacation rentals. What do we need to do? Well, it's kind of like restaurants and food carts. We need to amend the bed and breakfast ordinance to account for vacation rentals, or we need to create a new ordinance for vacation rentals. And these vacation rentals are easy to identify because they are listed in numerous websites on the internet. So what am I asking? I am asking for City Council to request the Bureau of Development Services to report back to the council with an assessment of the current situation regarding vacation rentals in Portland and with recommendations on how best to regulate them. In fact, I'm here at the suggestion of a planner who told me that this was what I needed to do if I expected the Bureau of Development Services to actually deal with the situation, which they currently are not.
Mr. Unger, I gave you some extra time, and Okay. Do you want to just summarize?
Yeah. So I just appreciate your consideration, And I just want to know if you have questions, that's all.
Well, I'm going to take you up on your suggestion. I think it's a very useful one. I'm going to, unless there's council objection, though, it's actually through the Bureau of Licenses, Bureau of Revenue now, we call it. So if you could hand your testimony to Carla, and I have your contact information, and we'll have someone from the Bureau of Revenue follow up with you. And I really appreciate you taking the time and to come testify before us and just the sharp, smart presentation that you gave us.
Thank you.
All right, that gets us to the consent agenda. Is there anyone that wishes to pull any items from the consent agenda? Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We'll move to the regular agenda. Can you please read the title for resolution item number 100?
Oh, you got time certain.
The 9:30s.
Oh, I do. I apologize. We have three time certains. Can you please read the title for 9:30 time certain, item number 83?
You could read both of them too, actually.
And item number 84.
83, authorize a master intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon Department of Transportation to implement stormwater retrofits. 84, authorize intergovernmental agreement with TriMet and the Oregon Department of Transportation to implement stormwater retrofits at the Barber Boulevard Transit Center.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. Adoption of these two agreements will approve a partnership between the Oregon Department of Transportation and the Bureau of Environmental Services to carry out several stormwater retrofit projects in Portland. I believe TriMet's also a party to this agreement.
Yes.
The first item is a master intergovernmental agreement that establishes a framework for Bureau of Environmental Services and ODOT to collaborate on future projects. The second item relates to an environmental services project to disconnect combined sewers from an overflow outfall pipe under the Banfield Freeway on the east side of the Willamette. As we all know, paved parking areas and other hard surfaces generate a substantial amount of stormwater runoff, which can wash pollutants into rivers and streams and erode stream banks and degrade fish habitat. Installing swales and rain gardens at facilities like the Barber Transit Center and other future projects envisioned in these agreements will manage that stormwater on-site and protect water quality and habitat. These facilities retain runoff, filter pollutants, and allow the water to soak into the ground, which helps replenish groundwater supplies. So we have Dean Marriott, the director of the Bureau of Environmental Services, and ODOT Region 1 Director Jason Tell are here today. And I'm sorry, your name is?
Sorry, Alan Leto with TriMet.
And Alan Leto with TriMet to talk about these partnerships.
Good.
So Dean?
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Mayor Adams, members of the council, I'm Dean Marriott, Environmental Services Director. Pleased to be here today to talk to you about both items 83 and 84. They're slightly different, but we'll get to those in just a moment. First, I want to just thank my colleagues here for their partnership. You'll see the results of the ability of TriMet and the city and ODOT to work together here in just a moment. Previously, last year, Council approved an intergovernmental agreement to design and construct stormwater improvements at ODOT's I-5 Baldock Storage Yard, and you'll see some photos of that in just a minute. That project has just been successfully completed. We want to show you some pictures of what it means when we can all work together well, and then I'll come back after Jason Tell talks about that project. I'll come back and talk to you about what's coming up. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jason, and I'm going to try to run the slideshow here if I can.
Great. Thank you very much, Dean and Mayor and Councilors. One of the best parts about what we're here to talk about today is we've actually already accomplished the first project, so you can really picture what it is that we're doing. And so on the screen, you can see one of our maintenance yards that serves the Portland area. And we've just completed a project that we'll show you the outcomes of to treat 3 acres of impervious surface. And this is an important location because it's located at the headwaters of the Tryon Creek. And so I think we can go to some slides here. This is can show you that impervious surface that we're talking about. And the partnership that we put together, Bureau of Environmental Services did the project design. When Dean and I talked early on about ways we can partner, one of the things we talked about is that he's got really smart people who know how to do these kind of designs, and so we talked about let's tap that expertise. So the work that was done, it was a project totaling $375,000. BES did the design, and now you can see what you get in terms of the project. So where we just had a lot of asphalt, we now have these planter strips that both look nice and serve a real purpose in keeping the Tryon Creek watershed clean, much cleaner than it would be otherwise. So this is just the beginning of what is a partnership. And right now, ODOT's committing a little over $2 million a year through 2014 to do more of these kind of projects. So we'll be collaborating, and we're already working with BES to identify the next priorities, which Dean will talk about some of the ones that are coming up next. But that moving forward, we're going to continue to find ways to expand upon that. So we're looking at leveraging other additional dollars to what we've already put in. And so I just want to really reiterate what a good partnership this is. I believe that the citizens are going to get a great product from this by our different agencies cooperating, and I think we're going to leverage additional dollars that otherwise wouldn't be received. So very happy to be here and be happy to answer questions at the end.
Thank you. Jason, it's just been wonderful. We started talking about this about a year ago, and things have really moved very quickly to the point of we've got one project down, another one you're going to hear about in just a second, and then more projects coming. So item 83 is the master IGA between ODOT and BES, and this will allow us to get projects done under this umbrella agreement and move them along much more quickly than having to do an IGA for each single project. And then item 84 is a master IGA between ODOT, the city, and TriMet, because you'll see in a moment the ownership of the transit center involves all three parties. So just to distinguish between those. I want to just talk about, as Jason said, there's two more projects in line coming up. First is I-5 at Barber Boulevard in Southwest 26th Avenue. This is the site between I-5 and Barber Boulevard. There's nearly 20 acres of impervious surface will be handled in these four areas you see outlined on this.
We're not seeing that up here.
I'm sorry. There it is. It's coming up now.
Okay.
Yeah, you see I-5 and then Barber Boulevard just to the north of that. And there's four areas in there that take about 20 acres of impervious surface, and they'll be routed to those areas for treatment and infiltration. This is an area that, again, protects. It's in the Tryon Creek watershed, so very helpful in protecting that. That's the design work is going to get going this year, and we hope to move into construction perhaps next year.
So before you, could you just go back to that slide?
Yes, I sure can.
I think there's recently been some sidewalk improvements, and I'm just wondering if either as part of this project or at the same time we could look at doing the sidewalks adjacent to Site 4 and 1 on 26th.
That's a great question. Commissioner, I'll check with folks on that. We haven't begun the work in this area yet, so let's see what we can do about that. The next one in the queue is Johnson Creek. This is shifting over to southeast. Johnson Creek in the I-205 area. This project will contain, detain, and treat stormwater runoff from 132 acres of impervious area along I-205 in southeast Foster that drains into Johnson Creek. So two really sensitive water bodies, two important projects that will be underway soon. And then, as Jason alluded to, there are more projects perhaps coming beyond this, which is why we want to have you approve the master IGA.
And again, I'm not as familiar with this area. I don't know if Foster has sidewalks at this location. The more we can collaborate between bureaus to make sure that if we're doing a major project, we get a series of improvements, that would be really great.
Good point. Thank you. Then the item 84, the second IGA before you today, is, as I mentioned, a three-party agreement, ODOT, TriMet, and the City of Portland. This would retrofit 4.5 acres of impervious surface at the Barber Transit Center, which is owned by ODOT but is a TriMet facility. And with TriMet as an active partner here, we're going to, as I said, require a three-party agreement. We've already done the design work on this for stormwater management, and the three parties are ready to begin construction this year. It would involve water quality treatment and detention, and again, will protect a tributary of Tryon Creek, one of our more sensitive water bodies. The total project cost estimated to be about $770,000, with contributions from all three parties. Photograph of the parking lot in case you haven't been there in a while. And with that concludes. I want to give Alan a chance. If you want to say anything, feel free.
Just to state TriMet's enthusiasm for being part of this partnership and looking forward to getting the work done during the season.
Thank you. And I want to make sure to thank my staff, Dave Cleaver, who's here, and Amin Wahab, who's sitting in the audience. They really did the lion's share of the work with Jason and his staff at ODOT and with TriMet. So thank you. With that, I'll be glad to, I think any of us would be glad to respond to any questions you might have.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate the partnership.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
Thank you very much, and this is a very exciting project. I just have some specific questions about the Barber Transit Center since I visit it twice daily. Are there any parking spaces going to be lost through the design?
I don't know. Do we know?
I think I can cover that.
No.
No, there will not be any parking spaces permanently lost. The infiltration treatments are in places that are paved but not parked on right now.
Okay. And as far as the construction management schedule, I have in my notes that it's going to be done by June 30th. And I wondered if there's been any if there could be some consideration to instead doing the construction over the summer. It gets heavily used by students parking there to go to PCC Sylvania, of which there are fewer over the summer. So if we were able to avoid disruption to the commuters during the when PCC is in session, that would be very helpful. And it would also mean that you could then plant at the end of the summer rather than at the beginning of the summer and maybe cut down on the maintenance of the new plantings.
Yeah, I think Commissioner will look into that, but I'm suspicious that it has to do with when the fiscal year ends.
Oh.
So
the challenge is that facility already has inadequate parking. If you don't get there by 8 o'clock, you're out of luck, and there's really nowhere else in the neighborhood to park. So
let us talk about it
afterwards
and see what we can do.
Thank you.
One thing I will mention in terms of dealing with the demand there, for those who are coming from the south, we do have a park and ride in Tiger that is not full, that we can direct people who can actually take advantage of that. It's on the same bus line into downtown. So we'll be trying to take advantage of that for those who are headed in that direction.
It's more the people who are living in Portland
right.
and wanting
right.
to get downtown that have the trouble. And I don't know of an alternative location where you could have feeder parking or whatever.
There are, but they tend to be small shared use lots on other lines. So we'll do what we can to get the information out and phase the construction so it's not impacting everything all at once.
That would be very helpful.
Thank you very much. Has anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one else signed up.
All right. Anything else, Commissioner?
Nope.
And I assume this is an emergency to get the work going, right?
Yes.
In the next contracting season. So, Carla, can you please call the vote on emergency ordinance item number 83?
Fritz?
Aye. And very good work. Thank you.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank Bureau of Environmental Services, Department of Transportation, and TriMet for putting their heads together and figuring out a way to do needed improvements that will, as I said in my opening remarks, will protect water quality and habitat. surface runoff from parking lots or transit centers is a huge source of runoff that often gets in our rivers and streams and causes pollution and erosion. So undertaking these projects, I think, leads the way, shows how future collaborations between TriMet and ODOT and BES can really help to make serious dent into runoff from parking lots, keep it out of our rivers and streams, and treat it naturally through filtration methods. So good work, and we appreciate the partnership. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 83 is approved. Can you please call the vote for emergency ordinance item number 84?
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 84 is approved. 85 has been rescheduled till February 2nd. Do you need to read it?
Item 85, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County for the design and construction of the Selwood Bridge project.
All right. Move to February 2nd. It gets us to the regular agenda.
I have that as a time certain at 10:15.
Sounds good. So noted. Can you please read the title for resolution, Council Calendar Item 100?
Create an independent citizen oversight committee for the city information technology projects and direct the Office of Management and Finance, city auditor, and city attorney to prepare all necessary implementing ordinances.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. I think to, first of all, we have a substitute that we need to move, and so I would move the substitute.
Where is it? Where is it?
There it is.
And what's the difference?
The difference in the substitute is we clarify that the five-member Citizen Oversight Committee is to be composed of one member appointed by each member of council. There was some confusion in the way we drafted that earlier. So five people, each appointed by a member of council. And the second major change is to remove language that spoke about the Independent Oversight Committee applying to projects over $500,000. We've spoken with Ken Russ, the director of OMF, and we are confident that there could be some problems by putting in a specific dollar amount, but we're confident that the overall goals of this effort will be met without having a threshold above which this applies. So it removes $500,000 as the threshold. Those are the two changes.
Okay. It's been moved. I recognize the second. Additional discussion on the motion to substitute. Anyone wish to testify on the motion to substitute? Clerk, can you please call the vote?
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Motion is approved. Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This resolution is before us today, and it's been discussed with all my colleagues on the council and the auditor's office as well. And it's really an effort to incorporate best practices regarding oversight of technology projects, particularly hardware, software, and telecommunications projects. I think we all know that these are complicated projects, and oftentimes, you know, the budget we're starting out with doesn't end up being the budget we end up with. And I think that this is an effort, or we need an effort, I think, to instill, as I said, best practices to ensure better oversight of these projects by both the City Council and by an independent body of citizens. And so this, and also by outside or external quality assurance consultants. So this resolution actually states these following principles that we ask OMF and the City Attorney's Office and the Auditor's Office to return to us with implementing language in terms of an ordinance. But the four overriding principles are, as I mentioned, establishing a five-person citizen oversight committee for these projects, nominated by one member, each five members, and nominated each one of us, nominating one member. And OMF has the ability to add, or the Office of Management Finance has the ability to add additional members as expertise may be required for a particular project. And these citizens will be involved. Hopefully, we want these citizens to have backgrounds in information technology and professional services. And so we state that in the resolution. And this committee will be convened at an early stage, early enough to actually consult with the Office of Management and Finance or other bureaus about this, the RFP, the request for proposals. So getting the outside citizen committee involved at an early stage in making sure the request for proposals is really getting at what the problem is needs to be solved, whether it's new technology or upgrades to technology, that those citizens are impaneled and consulted early on in the project. The second aspect of this, which is already pretty much a standard practice, but it is something that this resolution will state will be a standard practice, is to bring in external quality assurance consultants on all such projects that are going to be reviewed, or all such projects that will involve IT, hardware, software, or telecommunications projects. We've done that in the past. We've done that, I think, starting with the replacement of the Water Bureau billing system. I know we had external quality assurance consultants. We've had them for the SAP project, and we have them now on the Public Safety Systems Revitalization project. And I think they, this resolution simply states that they will become a standard item for all such projects. The third item in the resolution is to state that the council will actually, on a quarterly basis, as we did, I think the Public Safety Systems Review Project, did I get that right?
Public Safety Systems Revitalization.
Revitalization Project. Yep. As we had a briefing on that now several months ago, we will. I want the council, and the council should be more involved on a direct basis as a body of five people, meeting with the project managers, meeting with the independent quality assurance consultant, and also meeting with members of the Citizen Review Committee to review the progress of these projects on a quarterly basis. I think it was very helpful at the PSSRP hearing to be able to hear what questions not only I had, but what other members of council had. I think that helped make an excellent work session and something that we should replicate for all major projects in the future. And then the fourth major item really is, as I alluded to earlier, is having early involvement by the Citizen Review Committee or by the Citizen Oversight Committee, early review at the request for proposal stage. So that's in essence what the resolution directs OMF and City Attorney and the Auditor's Office to look at. We have here as invited testimony, we have Ken Rust, the Director of Office Management Finance, Mark Grinke, our Information Technologies, Bureau of Technology Services Director, and City Auditor LaVon Griffin-Vallade, if you all three want to come up here.
So I wonder if I might ask a question as you're assembling and maybe be able to help answer it. When you and I met on this idea, the only concern I raised to you was that I wondered if the oversight committee began early enough.
Right.
And I'm not seeing in here language that reflects that concern. So in other words, if you have them beginning to meet and oversee the project beginning at the RFP stage, mm-hmm. the decision's already been made to go out for an RFP. The two projects that I've been involved in from the beginning to the end are the PSSRP project and the automation of permitting at BDS. In both of those examples, they first come and demonstrate the council the need to even begin the analysis. Mm-hmm. The problems that I've encountered since being on council has not necessarily been once a project is underway, it's managed improperly. It's actually the step before that, whether or not the project should have happened in the first place.
Okay.
Without being right. too specific. So
right.
for me, and as we discussed in my office in December, what's going to be important is to somehow get language in here that allows for technical oversight at the front end. In other words, I came to council and said, here's how BDS currently manages a permit through the process, and walked the council through the paperwork that went from desk to desk that requires a shopping cart. This doesn't capture that earlier discussion that I think needs to happen SAP is an example. I happen to think it was the right thing to do to go to SAP. There are a lot of people that are saying now, well, I'm not sure that that even made sense to do that in the first place. I'm not sure it didn't cause more problems than it solved. But this resolution wouldn't have gotten at that, the way it's drafted currently. So what I either would like to hear, maybe I've got this wrong, I've read it wrong, or some language I think needs to be drafted that really captures that critical first stage, that is deciding whether or not you should go ahead with the project at all before you even begin an RFP.
Yeah, I think we do have a further resolved on page 2 that the IT Oversight Committee's expertise shall be utilized on the front end of projects through their review and input of the request for proposal and or request for information to ensure that these projects are reasonably scoped and feasible. It doesn't get to your point, as you said, about whether they're necessary.
I think we first need to have that discussion.
Okay.
We need to have that with an oversight group independent of the city, because I think I used the example with you that I remember vividly the first discussion I had with Tim Grew on the SAP project, and the way it was framed to me, it seemed to make sense. However, had I had the benefit of having a, technically competent group of independent oversight folks to say, well, here's another view on that, it would have allowed me to ask questions that I didn't know to ask in that first meeting.
And if, Commissioner, if I could just add on that, spending some money on some outside technical independent consultant that does not expressly get any more work.
Right.
That is a penny-wise and a pound-wise, because we're not, the difference between SAP and what you're doing is a significant difference in expertise, and we're often outgunned in finding five people that are going to be expert on every single possible major and deeply technically complicated issue is going to be hard. So I would like to see, as part of this as well, an annual work plan that's part of the oversight committee, and that we authorize where we think necessary, but at least be open to it, outside expertise, to do that up front, to advise us on that up front question of should we do this at all.
Yeah, well, the resolution does allow OMF to add additional expertise to this committee.
But I think that expressly adding your points are really important, Commissioner.
Yeah, because this is real clear that it starts at the RFP process, and I'd like it to begin one step before that.
Okay.
Part of this is establishing the legislative history, because we are asking them to come back with implementing ordinances, and I think your point is well taken, and I can either try to craft something on the fly here or that addresses your point, or we've established what we want.
Well, I'd really be more comfortable voting for this with specific language that captures that, because for me that has been the problem that I've experienced since being on council, is the decisions already made, and we're trying to manage a decision that was made that probably should have been decided differently in the beginning.
And I actually have a suggestion for a simple amendment for that. I don't have one for the mayor's, but in the second, be it further resolved, we could add to it so that it would state, be it further resolved that the IT Oversight Committee's expertise shall be utilized on the front end of projects through there, and then add initial scoping and preliminary before review. So it would say utilized on the front end of project through their initial scoping, preliminary review, and input of the request for proposals. Does that capture what you want?
I think we have to be careful about the terms of art as we're drafting this, because I'm not sure the initial scoping actually captures what I'm trying to say. I mean, I'm talking about even probably before that, as the idea begins to bubble up that you need to do a certain technological improvement. That should trigger whatever that language is that would trigger that. Oversight is what should happen at that point.
So maybe we need to work on the resolution for a week and come back.
Yeah. Why don't we?
I'd be comfortable.
Let's hear from our panelists also, and maybe they might have an idea or two on that. So we'll start with City Auditor.
Okay.
LaVon.
Good morning. LaVon Griffin-Vallade, City Auditor. Happy to be here. I definitely hear your concerns, and I think that we can all agree to figuring out whether these projects are necessary to begin with, and then also a plan, an annual plan, is terrific. So I'm very supportive of this effort to improve the oversight of large projects. I've long been concerned about the capacity of public sector organizations in managing these large and complex projects. I'd actually like to see something similar for capital construction projects as well, but I regard this as a good step forward. And I'm happy to participate in developing the language for implementation of the Oversight Committee. I do have to warn you that though that this does not preclude the Audit Services Division of my office from auditing any of these projects in the future. So that's...
Of course not.
I know.
Is there something in here that raises that concern for you?
No,
oh, okay.
No. Right. That was just
I hope not.
Just wanted to make sure that's understood, that I definitely would plan to audit these projects in the future. Again, I'm very supportive of this effort, and it's a long time in coming, I believe, for the city, and I would encourage Multnomah County and other public sector organizations to do similar kind of initiative. So I will turn it over to Ken and Mark.
Yep. Can I ask you a question? My concern with the resolution, the way it's written now, and I know the intent is totally good, is that it sort of captures what we've been doing already and hasn't worked. And so the issues raised by Commissioner Leonard, I think, are really important. Mm-hmm. And the point that I raised, I'm very passionate about. I feel repeatedly outgunned by the complexity of these projects. And having more experts, which we did on SAP, I wouldn't vote for it when I became a city commissioner, you'll recall, unless they assembled an outside group of experts. It didn't work, in part because they weren't involved from the conception, which happened in the last year of, I think, Greg Katz's administration, and I wasn't here. So very much, I'm asking you to reflect on your audit, because a lot of the stuff that's in here, not the standing committee, but other committees, were already doing and failing at it. So what's missing from this resolution? I mean, I thought that what was raised was clearly ripped from the pages of your audit.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think what has failed in the past, and in my discussions with Commissioner Salzman and his staff, is that the ongoing transparency and that an independent voice is not the voice coming back to council and sharing concerns and making those concerns not only transparent but clear, that those need to be addressed before moving forward. And so that's some of the issues that I think we would hope that this oversight committee would be able to bring to these large projects is not only the alarm bells, because the alarm bells did go off in the SAP project, I know for sure, but having that come from a committee with authority to step in and say, we need to stop now and we need to address these concerns.
The other thing that there's a fellow sitting in the audience named Dave Lister that when I was elected to the city council and was very concerned about this project, I asked him a number of questions because he has some expertise in this area, and one of them was that we own the code. He mentioned we were outgunned in terms of the specifics of each project. And some of that came up in your audit as well. And I guess, don't you want more of your audit recommendations contained in this marquee, what ends up being sort of the marquee headline response to your audit?
Well, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, of course.
And I think the suggestion by Commissioner Fritz is a good one to take a week and to back through it.
I'm totally comfortable with that.
I didn't hear Commissioner Fritz say take an extra week. Is that?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you did?
For the resolution.
For the resolution. Okay.
Right. Just for the resolution, I think it is worth putting some thoughtful time in it. I want to hear from the other witnesses and also from the public to see what they want to do. But I think as the mayor says, it's important to make sure it's all encompassing.
The other thing I would add, if we're going to spend some more time crafting it, and this, I didn't talk to Commissioner Salzman about this in December, but it is something that I considered as this was being brought forward, is one of the things that I've noticed that has been a important dynamic for me is to know that I'm personally accountable for a particular project. And so in the case of the computerized system at BDS, in the case of the PSSRP, I was asked by former Mayor Potter to be the liaison to the project. And as both of those have gone down their various paths, I'm painfully aware that if something goes wrong, it could, again, look like one of the other IT projects that has occurred in the past that, that doesn't reflect well on the city. So I'm wondering, and this, and I'm not saying that it should include this, but I'm wondering about the possibility of naming a person on council to be the, even if it falls under the mayor's purview in OMF, the particular project, naming a council person as the liaison to the project. I think that's has a huge motivating factor in making sure that a person is actually accountable on the council for the project, and that engages. My own experience has been it causes you to be engaged much more than you otherwise would be, knowing that it could fall in your lap if it goes south.
I think that's an excellent suggestion. I actually, in my executive order, put you in my executive order assigning bureaus this project. So I think including that for future mayors is
I think that's an excellent suggestion, too. And I think that as we go through the process of developing the authorizing ordinance, that we will certainly come around and chat with you and make sure that
he's being here
in the resolution.
I think it'd be, I mean, I would look, I'm not saying at this point it should be. I'm saying if we're going to take a week anyway, I'd like to have the discussion with Commissioner Saltzman and my colleagues, because it has made a difference, I know, in how I've approached these two projects versus my passive oversight where, you know, there's a presentation made and I know what I know based on the presentation versus the day-to-day operations. Gives me a chance to, I work closely with Mark and Ken on the PSSRP at a level I would never work at them with them, given that it's ultimately going to come back to me if something goes south. Same way with the BDS project. I know for me that's been a huge dynamic in how I approach this project differently than I would if I weren't named the liaison. I'm just wondering if that, since we're taking this approach on IT projects, if we shouldn't look at what we've found that works as well and include that as part of the template as we move forward.
And I'd like to just add to that, that our experience, I think this is something that is particularly important with the commission form of government, that with the public safety revitalization project, there's the mayor who's in charge of police, myself as charge of emergency communications, and Commissioner Leonard who has fire. And having him as the champion of that project makes it very clear to all city staff that, yes, they can come to me with their concerns about the computer-aided dispatch at BOAC, and that I'm going to be talking to Commissioner Leonard and we're going to be figuring it out together because he's the champion for the project. I think that's been crucial to what was seen in the work session that we had in December, that that project is indeed moving forward very smoothly.
And I, when staff, when there was inevitably, and it's normal and helpful when on that particular project, when there was staff disagreement, I reiterated that the decision maker is Commissioner Leonard.
If I could just jump in for a second. I'm actually currently the council champion on one IT project, and that's trying to get my iPhone to work properly.
How's that going for you?
Good luck with that.
Well, yeah, you already did that one.
I'm just going to say if past performance is a predictor of future success, I think we may want to think twice about having me as a council champion. What I would say is that what I'm hearing in this discussion is that the framework that Dan has proposed has actually begun to generate a lot of good ideas. And it does, in my view, it is in some respects a compilation of some existing practices. It incorporates some best practices. And what I learned, in fact, just recently when Ken and his team briefed me on it, they had some ideas for further refinement. So what I think is happening is we are getting to a more of what the mayor referred to as an omnibus approach that brings some clarity. And so while I was certainly ready to vote on this today, if it's the will of the council, I think another week to make sure that we've got it just right is a good idea. And I think it's this discussion that has given us the catalyst for getting that roadmap. So I want to thank Dan.
Okay. So I'm fine with taking another week, and it's good to get all these issues out there. So,
anything you'd like to add,
Ken or Mark?
Maybe just add some comments. I'm Ken Russ, the Director of the Office of Management and Finance, and with me today is Mark Greinke, who is the Director of the Bureau of Technology Services. Certainly supportive of the resolution and the intent. I know that all of us have been bedeviled by these projects. They're difficult, they're complicated, and we've tried and are using many of the techniques that are embodied in the resolution. We've used QA consultants routinely on most all of the city's major software implementation projects over the last 10 years. Some of those have gone well, some of those have not gone well. We had QA involved at the very earliest stages of the EBS SAP implementation process before we even hired any vendor. They were there when we hired consultants. We utilized citizen oversight to assist with the go-live decisions. That project didn't go as planned, and so this is not necessarily a guarantee, but having additional eyes and input is helpful. And in that particular project, we did a lot of work in the pre-project phase. We had an independent firm assess the feasibility of that twice before we brought that to council in 2004. Now, we didn't have a citizen review of that, but we did have quite a few eyes on that. And I know that over the course of that project, I probably talked with each council office dozens of times about the status of the project. So in terms of transparency, you know, I think we went beyond where we typically have gone in trying to engage council, not necessarily collectively, but certainly individually. All those things, I think, are indicators of, as we try to craft something that will work better for us going forward, that even the best laid plans won't necessarily guarantee success, because sometimes these things are a bit of not knowing what you don't know until you get into it. And how we do a better job of that at the front end is really critical, but I don't think we can design a process that will eliminate all risk, but we can certainly do a better job trying to trap that and make sure that we're informed as we move forward. And that's certainly something that I'm interested in, and I know Mark is as well. Before we had this discussion, I know that there were some things that we were concerned about in the resolution in terms of the threshold for what would define a major project. I think it would be a good idea to have, now that it's been changed a bit, but to engage maybe the input of the citizen experts to help us develop sort of a rule about what is a major project. Some things that are routine replacement may not, even though they're expensive, may not necessarily have a lot of risk associated with them. Some things that may be relatively small but have a lot of risk embedded with them, maybe something we want to focus on. So having some set of rules or a way to evaluate that and engaging our experts would be really helpful. So those are some of the thoughts that I've had. I think it's timely. I think it's necessary. And I think we're going to have to continue to work at how to make the process allow us to make good decisions, but recognizing that sometimes even that won't necessarily guarantee success. And that's just unfortunately part of the problem with these projects, but I think we can do a better job, and I know that we've learned a lot from the experiences over the last 10 years.
Mark, do you want to add anything?
Good morning, Council. Mark Ranke, City's Chief Technology Officer. I really just wanted to stress two points that Commissioner Leonard brought up that I think are very important. We have a tremendous portfolio of requests for projects, more than we probably can actually deliver, and one of the challenges that we face is making sure we are working on the projects that serve the best interests of the city. So having some governance structure that decides that these projects should even go forward, I think, is critical. Lots of times they come through, and there isn't that prioritization process. It's kind of first come, first serve basis. And I really do want to applaud Commissioner Leonard for understanding that. Also, I think it's important, these are technology projects, but they're meeting business needs. So to view them purely as IT projects, but not understand the very extreme importance to have the business partner here at the table with us explaining why that need is there is important. And then ultimately having a council champion, because these often address problems that meet all of your portfolio needs, is extremely important to have one person that's ultimately accountable. I do want to applaud Commissioner Leonard for bringing up those points.
And Mayor, if I could just add one other point. There was, when you gentlemen visited with me, you raised the question of if we create this new system and there's already embedded in an existing process some oversight, do we end up with duplication or other things? And I think you used PSSRP as an example. But if we are going to take an extra week, I'd be interested in knowing how we avoid any unintended duplication.
Yeah, we have that potential with the PSSRP, and also we have a newly formed oversight committee for the public safety GO bond measure that has some technology elements, the 800 megahertz radio system replacement project, the emergency operations
center.
So,
Ken, I think in any rational system, there's a way to at least make sure the council is aware that there's the potential for duplication, and we can then grapple with that. But I will say that what I think often gets us in trouble is that we don't have enough of a discussion about risk at the front end. When we're honest about risk, and I'm just previewing that on Thursday we'll be talking about the Greenway and South Waterfront, and we bumped up the word risk on the slide and put it in red because the council is going to have to make some judgments based on risk, and there are some risks we can't control, including whether we have another flood like 2006 or whatever. I think when we are completely transparent about the risk and we ask the question that the mayor often asks when we talk about technology or complicated things, which is, why are we doing this again? Then I think we bring the public along with us. We're sort of making sure that everyone understands the parameters. That's the spirit of what we're trying to do here.
And I agree. I agree with your concern about duplication. I think that my experience over the years, just to the other side of the coin, is that the difference in the needed expertise on an SAP project versus the needed expertise on the Water Bureau billing project can be significant. And so I think looking at and five people that have sort of that universal sort of experience and expertise and the volume of work we do, I think it's going to be tough. So I think point well made, but I also want to match experience. So when the first thing I saw in SAP was that the steering committee was bureau managers. They're not tech. That's if one of them happens to be technically proficient enough to be able to provide meaningful oversight to SAP, that's great. But I think that would be, I thought at the time that was needle in the haystack, and that's why I thought that the suggestion of outside experts on that project worked. So I am concerned that we're sort of locking in something that actually is locking in too much of the status quo that hasn't worked. And so I really, in the next draft, want to see, especially out of the auditor's office, if you would take up the request, sort of what are we going to do differently, and how is it responsive to specific action items called for in your audit, which I thought was an excellent audit.
Thank you. Happy to take up that request.
Okay, we will take testimony on this draft, and then we'll move it on to next week. Do you want a week or 2 weeks?
A week.
Okay. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter?
We have two people sign up, Dave Lister and John McCormick.
Welcome back to the City Council. You just need to give us your first and last name. That clock in front of you will help you, as you know, count down your 3 minutes, and let us know if you are authorized to lobby on behalf of any organization.
My name is John McCormick. I'm an attorney at The Standard, Portland's largest downtown private employer. I'm not authorized to lobby on anyone's behalf. I'm also a Portland resident and taxpayer, and I want to thank you for allowing me to come speak to you this morning. I want to speak in support of the resolution that you've discussed this morning. I enjoyed the discussion. At The Standard, we serve approximately 8 million customers around the country, and our information technology needs and resources dedicated to information technology have expanded greatly over the last decade or so. In my current role, I manage contracting procedures at The Standard, specifically information technology contracts and the negotiation of those contracts. Prior to joining The Standard, I served a similar role for the Oregon Department of Justice as an assistant attorney general in the general counsel division there. So together I have over 10 years of experience in drafting and negotiating the sorts of contracts that you're talking about here this morning and are the subject of the resolution. During that time, those 10 years, I've been involved in successful projects and projects that have had cost overruns and schedule overruns. And I think those risks, as you've discussed, are inherent in this sort of work. And what I want to do here today is support this effort and offer the standards support to your efforts to help do what we can to mitigate those risks and take steps to avoid them in the future. So we believe, and I believe personally, that the city would only benefit by creation of the oversight committee that you're talking about this morning. As you mentioned, Mayor Adams, five people is not a large number of people, and having worked in the public sector, I've been on the other end of being outgunned by resources, but I think that the appropriate mix of technical project management and legal resources can provide a valuable service to the city and perform a valuable function throughout the project life cycle of these projects. And Commissioner Leonard, your comments at the start of the discussion are very well taken, and I fully support that approach to these sorts of projects, I've seen it work very well when appropriate resources are involved much prior to the RFP stage, and those initial decisions can be made using the proper input. So finally, if you do choose to adopt a resolution today, I'm here to offer the standard support to help in any way we can by contributing expertise, any experience that we have that might be helpful, and any assistance in creating this oversight committee. So thanks again for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have based on my experience.
Thanks for your offer. Really appreciate it very much. And you're so close.
And I'm so close. I can come across the street.
Sir.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, members of the council. My name is Dave Lister. I started doing systems work in the late 1970s, and I co-founded Integrated Data Concepts in 1985. And we're about to celebrate our 26th year in business doing custom software development for business and industry. Not a bad run for a tech firm. We've watched a lot of the city projects over the years, and we've joked around the office that if we could get just one city contract, we could all retire. But that hasn't happened. You've hit on all the points I wanted to make already, but I do want to reiterate on a few of them. First of all, technology is a vast field, and you can't say that you're going to have a board of five citizens that are going to be able to cover everything that might come up. My personal background would be useful for things like utility billing systems or payroll systems, but if you asked me to help you do an automated email notification system, my eyes would roll back in my head and I wouldn't know the first thing about it. So as you work on this resolution, you might want to consider a core committee and give them the ability to bring in other expertise as needed on the particular project. Commissioner Leonard's point is excellent. After the RFP has been crafted, the horse is out of the barn. And after that, the vendor is going to tell you what you want to hear. The bureau managers are going to tell you what you want to hear, but you won't have any independent voice. So I think from what I know about the SAP implementation, if I'd have been involved in talking with you about that plan at that time, I might very well have said, don't attempt to integrate all those payroll systems. It's not going to work. Leave them in place and create an interface for financial consolidation to the SAP system. So that's the kind of input you could get from folks from the outside. And it should happen before the RFP process. It should happen before you even decide to go forward. And that's a very good point. There's no reason to adapt technology just for the sake of adapting technology unless it serves some purpose. We've worked with our clients over the years, and we've tried to avoid what we call the bleeding edge of technology. And we try to keep well back of even the leading edge of technology. But in conclusion, I think it's a great idea. I think you should do it. Have a diverse group. Get them involved early on. And that's all I have for you.
If I have one question.
Yes, sir.
In our council discussion, a lot of good ideas have surfaced that can strengthen this resolution. Is there anything that you've seen on the private sector around quality control that is conspicuously missing from the approach that's proposed?
Well, the most important thing, and this may not be an answer to your question, but the most important thing that we try to do in our business that oftentimes is overlooked is you have to get the users, the low-level users of the technology or of the system involved very early on. I can't tell you how many times we've written a system based on management's specifications, and then we put it in front of Sally, who enters the purchase orders, and she says, where do I put the purchase order number? And the managers look at each other and say, we didn't know you needed a purchase order number on that screen. So input from the users is the most important thing. The bureau management level, they're up there. They're looking at the big picture. But you have to talk to the people that are in the trenches about what they really need.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you
both. Appreciate you taking the time.
So if I could just
summarize.
Summarize, yeah. So we will, I just want to summarize again, the core principles of this resolution are to establish citizen oversight early on in the process. And even as written now, we'll move it up to having the committee look at the feasibility. I do want to restate, because I think numerous people have said you need different services and skill sets on the committee, that this resolution does allow the Office of Management and Finance to add additional